You're listening to LawPod UK from the creators of the UK Human Rights Blog. It's a podcast that discusses developments across all aspects of civil and public law in the United Kingdom. All the comments are current at the time of podcast publication. LawPod UK is produced by the barristers at One Crown Office Row.
Matt Hill and Gideon Barth, welcome to the podcast. Matt Hill was counsel to the inquests to Hillsborough and the Birmingham pub bombing. And before joining Chambers, Matt worked on the Bloody Sunday inquiry as an historian. Gideon, also an historian, is currently acting as counsel to the Birmingham pub bombing inquest. Jim Duffy has been on this podcast explaining the nuts and bolts of this latest inquiry into the blood contamination scandal, when patients in the 80s and 90s were infected with hepatitis and HIV as a result of the use of infected plasma products from abroad. But we're here to talk about inquiries into historical events generally. In your words, Gideon, they've had their own unique challenges and potential pitfalls. Can you expand on this a bit?
Well, I think the first problem with historical inquiries generally is the huge cost that accompanies them. The Bloody Sunday inquiry, which is probably one of the biggest inquiries into historical events, is estimated to have cost around £192 million, and probably more. Similarly, Hillsborough, not an inquiry but an inquest, would have cost a significant amount. All that I know is that the legal bill for the families, which was funded by legal aid, was around £63 million. Other ongoing inquiries into historical events, such as the undercover policing inquiry or the independent inquiry into child sexual abuse, are also likely to rack up huge legal costs. And that's because historical events necessarily produce a lot of documents over time, and then it becomes a large inquiry to carry out. It's more than just cost. There's an emotional difficulty that accompanies historical events that doesn't necessarily accompany inquiries into more contemporaneous events. And then there are also problems with the loss of evidence and individuals' ability to recall or remember things that happened so long ago.
I think I'd add to that as well the fact that there's a very interesting dynamic that develops between the families or the victims involved in historic inquiries and other parties, including the coroners or the inquiry's legal team. By the time you get your historical inquiry up and running, you have generally campaigned for many, many years to achieve that goal. Just as you reach the point of your success in convincing people that there should be an inquiry and the tide seems finally to be running in your favour, it's at that point that you have to hand over the process to a bunch of bloodless lawyers who are obsessed with process and disclosure, and the whole thing suddenly slows down and you as the victim or you as the family of the victims lose control of the process that up until then you've been driving. I think that's a very hard moment for all of those involved, and it's a difficult one to manage.
I must say it's a very interesting perspective that you both must have, being both historians and now lawyers working on these inquiries. Could you, one of you or both of you, maybe give us some insight into what you bring to an inquiry as an historian?
I'm not sure that the two disciplines are so far apart, actually. I thought about this quite a lot when working on Bloody Sunday, particularly in light of other cases that were going on at the time, particularly around David Irving and Holocaust denial. And actually, there's no great trick to either, I think, other than seeking to approach matters with as much objectivity as you can muster, reading and reading and reading as much as you possibly can, and then applying whatever critical faculties you have to them. So I don't think there's a huge difference in terms of the skill set that is bought. I think the hardest thing to let go of, as somebody who came from a background of studying and teaching history, was that my role on Bloody Sunday or on Hillsborough isn't to come to the ultimate conclusion. That's for the tribunal, be it a judge or a panel of judges or the jury. You have to let that go, and your role is strictly about presenting evidence, presenting a way of getting through that evidence in order to get to the truth and to get to the accuracy of the matter. And I think it's quite hard to let go of the fact that it's not up to you anymore. It's down to somebody else. Nobody has appointed you to make the final call on what happened. And so you have to accept what your role is within the process.
Of course. Well, the first thing to remember is that these events are incredibly difficult to recollect about. They are often very traumatizing events, certainly taking Bloody Sunday as an example. Those are memories that many people may not want to dredge up. They will be incredibly traumatic. And even for those who do want to be involved in the inquiries, there are often those who don't want to be involved but will become involved just by hearing about the evidence in the press or by other means. And those people may not want to reopen old wounds that they've spent years trying to move on from. And so there's a very difficult balance, both to explore the evidence properly and to allow victims to have as much input as possible, while also managing the sensitivities there are. And the other slightly different difficulty is that the length of time that passes between these events and their eventual inquiry as they are now, and whether that's Hillsborough or Bloody Sunday or the upcoming inquiry into the contaminated blood scandal, and those emotions will have changed over the years. And there's often a feeling, whether justified or otherwise, there's often a feeling that there might be a cover-up or that some truth is being withheld just by the nature of the time that it's taken for victims or their families to have got to the bottom of what's going on. And that is something that has to be carefully managed. I think that the feeling that there might be a cover-up is justified. Whether that's true or not has to come out of the evidence. Again, it's an emotional response which needs to be carefully managed.
Obviously, a closely related question or worry about this process is to do with the trustworthiness of people's memories and documentary evidence even.
I think there's an example from Bloody Sunday which has always stuck with me, which is a man who is shown on photographs from 1972 carrying a dying teenager across a car park. And he had done nothing wrong. What he was doing was absolutely admirable and brave, to try to go to the aid of somebody who had been shot and try to save their life. And this individual, this witness, came along to give evidence some 30 years later. And he genuinely and sincerely didn't recall doing this at all. And it was only when he saw the photographs, recognised himself in the photographs, that he accepted that, yes, he must have done this, but it was just a complete blank in his memory. I think that there's sometimes a misconception that what these historic inquiries do is just get everybody into the room and ask them what they can remember. In fact, almost all of the work is done on the basis of accounts that have been given in the past or contemporaneous photographs or videos. And it's not so much a case of asking somebody what they can remember. It is more a case of asking them what they meant by what they said back in 1972. But yes, there is an enormous question about the reliability of memory. There's an enormous question about how much original evidence you have. And there's a question of how easy it is to test how accurate that original evidence was some 30 plus years down the line. I find it remarkable how much of a picture can be painted, but it all relies on the fact that there is sufficient contemporaneous evidence there to allow you to work out and join the dots where it is missing. If you don't have that evidence in the first place because it's been destroyed or it was never taken, it is much, much, much harder.
That's a very vivid and interesting example that you give, and it makes me think of the opposite phenomenon, which is created memories or false memories of things that didn't happen. So you can get somebody really not remembering something, or not through any sort of suggestibility, because it happens to all of us, thinking that they've remembered something, whereas in fact it hasn't happened. Have you ever come across any example of that?
Absolutely. If somebody is involved in a major incident, big public disaster or something like that, they will decide to read about it, to look at the news footage, to listen to the reports and the articles that are written subsequently. And there's always a question in your mind when evaluating their evidence about how much of it is genuine from the time itself and how much has crept in. And I stress, it is not in any way dishonest. It's not in any way trying to pull the wool over anybody's eyes. Over the years, you confuse that which you saw with that which you learnt later. One in particular, again, from Bloody Sunday, is that there was an awful image of the fact that a man had been shot and had lost part of his eye as a result of being shot, and he was killed. And the amount of people who believe that they saw that image, when actually it's highly likely that they saw a photograph subsequently, was really quite telling, and it was very difficult to work out who was actually there.
It seems that the more we know about the way the human mind works, the more slippery what we think we know becomes. Moving out a little bit with a wider focus, I just want to ask you both how it comes to be decided that any particular event merits an inquiry, particularly an historic event, rather than anything else.
Well, it's a fundamentally political decision. Politicians use inquiries as a tool more and more nowadays in order to satisfy questions that arise contemporaneously. It's a politician's decision, and ultimately then the Secretary of State, who's pressured by others to start one of these inquiries. In the case of the contaminated blood scandal, that's a consequence of campaigning, but there are calls for inquiries and judge-led inquiries more or less every day in the press regarding different things. I saw one today calling for a judge-led inquiry into the scope of Russia's involvement in elections. And so it's a political tool. It just happens to be carried out by lawyers. And so there is no rhyme or reason as to why certain historical events get investigated and not others.
I think there's a very interesting study to be done on exactly that question, but it's really a study for an historian or a political scientist and not really for a lawyer.
But again, the whole concept of a judge-led inquiry is fine, provided you think that judges and the judiciary are the most impartial and independent members of society. But is there a point at which sometimes, because of the subject matter, another profession would be better placed to investigate?
I think that's a very valid point. I think that judge-led is synonymous, really, for being independent. I think there's an element of being forensic as well. But more than anything else, it's being independent. And judges are good at being independent, and judges are good at making findings of fact, and they're good at attributing causation arising to and from those events, because that is the day-in and day-out job of a judge. When you raise wider issues, when you ask inquiries to look into matters of culture or of ways in which something has developed over the course of half a century or the context of a particular event, I think that the speciality of judges is less important, and indeed it's dangerous for judges potentially to start going into those waters because they dilute, to mix my metaphors, they dilute the specialism that a judge brings. And I do think that these are relatively dangerous times for public inquiries as the terms of reference get broader and broader, the expectations get higher and higher, and judges are the ones who are supposed somehow to fulfil all of these roles whilst also maintaining a lofty independence. I think that there is a good case, not necessarily for somebody else to have the inquiry, but to see an alternative process of wide-scale disclosure or waiving of 30-year rules, for example, and placing information into the public domain, possibly or ideally through the internet, so that people can access it and people can look at it, and historians and others can then work from those documents to come to their own conclusions. And I sometimes think that that would be a better model to adopt than to seek to ask a judge to gather all of that information together and then give his or her verdict at the end of it.
Well, I think you've both raised the problem of judges being expected to be all things to all people, which brings us to the predictive element of inquiries, that judges not only have to make findings of fact, but they have to come up with recommendations too. And I wanted to ask you both, looking back, how useful the inquiries that have been held and have been concluded and have come up with recommendations have been in terms of change.
Bloody Sunday came up with no recommendations for the good reason that everything happened 30 years before, so the kind of recommendations that you might have expected from such an inquiry, such as how soldiers are trained and such like, would all have been so hopelessly out of date that they simply weren't worth making. I think that is a significant issue with historical inquiries. I don't think that there is much useful that can be recommended at the end of them, save in some fairly unusual circumstances. Sometimes you can get recommendations about procedures or approaches or the way in which material is going to be stored, but historical inquiries aren't going to fulfil that role, which is so important in inquiries into contemporary events, which is to give advice about how one avoids them happening again.
But inquiries into historical events also serve the purpose of simply providing answers as to questions of fact. So what did in fact happen on that day, whenever it was, and why did certain things happen, without necessarily leading to making recommendations. As Matt said, there's no reason why the Bloody Sunday inquiry would make recommendations about what the army did back then and what they do now, because things change so much. But the process by which individuals understand or learn about what happened to them or their family members in the past is a cathartic and useful process. I think it's useful for them even in circumstances where recommendations aren't made.
Thank you very much, both of you. You've cast a lot of light on this particular subject with its subtleties and problems.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
LawPod UK is produced by One Crown Office Row. For more editions of LawPod UK, you can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and recommend us to a friend.